You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, and we're basically doing like the semi-mirror of last week where we've got Chris McFeely and Nicole Hale and no Chris Triplett. So, there you go. But welcome, and Nicole, hi, hey.
Hi, how's it going?
Stranger.
It's been a while. I'll be in and out here in the next couple months, so who knows? You might get me, you might not.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
You could thank the snowstorm for that.
Nice. So, it is Fanboy versus... Well, it's Veterans Day, so we'll say thank you to all those who served and allow us to do a podcast, I guess.
yeah. We fought for our internet freedoms.
So
allow us to, you know, to freedom of speech on the internet. So.
Allow us this day to buy stuff on sale. So, because like a pre-Thanksgiving thing. And I'll mention early, I'll alert you all later, but we may not have a show next week. So I didn't realize how fast Thanksgiving was coming up. I've got family coming in. So anyway, so we may not have a show next week. With rotating cast and everything, it's been fun. Also, we'll say that Chris Triplett, if you're not watching the video, is played by Dum Dum Dugan this week.
Yes, so, Dum Dugan.
There's that.
You went with my choice.
I did. Yeah. Well, you hadn't been on in a while, so you get the choice, so. All right. So news last week was really kind of focused around one thing. So we may talk about other things this week. So Chris McFeely, what do we have?
Okay. We've got a couple of new announcements. Actually, this is not, and I don't wish to alarm you or anything. We've actually got some comic news on the comic podcast this week.
Comics news on a comic.
What? Yeah, because it would have been before last week's show that Marvel did a couple of more of their one-word Marvel Now teasers. But now we know what they are, so we can just report them directly, which is the rather disheartening announcement of a new Uncanny X-Men series by Bendis and Chris Bacalo on the art. Because obviously, like, that's what we needed, was another X-Men title. It seemed like maybe we could end Uncanny X-Men and replace that with all new X-Men, but obviously not. We needed a... And I mean, let's not kid ourselves, despite the fact that the word Avengers is in the title, everything about it thus far indicates that Uncanny Avengers is an X-book as well, you know. So we got two new X-books out of it, and yeah. Uncanny Avengers.
Excitement in your voice there, McFeely.
Yeah. Well, I realized Uncanny Avengers was an X-book finally when I twigged about... I think I commented on the show about how putting Jonathan Hickman on the main Avengers book really seemed to undercut their presentation of Uncanny Avengers as being the premier book of Marvel Now, you know? And the Avengers franchise. And it was then that I realized, oh, it's because it's an X-book. You know, it's not... It's not an Avengers book. It's four X-Men dudes and Captain America and Thor. And the other book that's been announced is perhaps the most random announcement of Marvel Now yet. The teaser was Fearless by Colin Bunn with art by, what was the art by? Will Sliney. And that's Fearless Defenders, which is a sort of follow-up to Colin Bunn's Fear Itself, the Fearless maxi series from last year, which is going to feature Valkyrie and Misty Knight.
Oh, this is the female.
Yes,
title
yes.
That,
well, it's about. Got Valkyrie and Misty Knight in it. I don't know what the stance is on more females appearing. But
my understanding, as I read it from another source, was that the intention is this will be a rotating female-led title.
I can dig it.
So they'll have, you know, rotating different members, or people will come in, people come out. But it's supposed to be an all-female team.
Let's just hope it's better than Fear Itself.
Oh, mm-hmm. Mercy. Defenders, the Fearless, rather, not Fearless. Fearless was all right. It was too long, 12 issues. It meandered an awful lot. But it came around for a fairly solid conclusion that made good use of Marvel history and continuity and such. I can't say I'm hungry to read more about it. I don't feel like this is a female-led book that I will be supporting this time out. It's just a little too random, and Fearless did not impress me enough to really get me on board to come back for this one. But we'll see what the reviews are like. I doubt it'll be bad with Bunn writing it. You know, he's good, but we'll see. It's next to Morbid. Misty Knight's cool. She got a robot arm.
Everybody's got a robot arm these days.
Are cool these days, yeah. She was the original. She had a robot arm like decades ago.
In the future, everyone's cyborg.
Fighting her style.
Yeah, everybody's had a robot arm in the future. It's like one of the things. It's a rite of passage. They whack off your arm.
Instead of tattoos, it's robot arms, huh?
That's right.
Tattoos are too mainstream these days.
That's
so
passe.
It's very gauche. Well, that and like wearing lots of black. It's the future.
I've got that down. I've got the black down.
I heard it's slimming, but I'm not buying it. So.
Yeah, along with Morbius, that's got to be one of the most random announcements of Marvel now. Struggling to think of a more random one. But yeah, two books I have to say don't exactly excite me to any great degree, which is consistent with DC's new announcements for this week.
What could they be?
well, JD, I just have to look up details here. Yeah, so we know Justice League of America is coming in a month or two's time.
And it's coming. I mean, it is...
It is coming with 50 variant covers. One for every state.
Coming to get you. Which so, I've heard is more of a copy-paste than a... I haven't seen the actual images, but...
It's the same characters pasted onto like a background.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you guys cut out. Which one are you talking about?
Justice League America.
Yeah.
I would assume they'll paste it on top of the Statue of Liberty for New York and the Washington Monument for Washington and famous landmark in Kansas for Kansas.
I don't know what they'll do because there's nothing in Kansas.
Well, Mars Attack last year had, what was it? Like 90 different covers or something like that?
Yeah, one for every card in the original Mars Attacks trading card collection.
Is this... It's like consumers have got to get on board and realize that if you keep buying all the variant covers, they're just going to keep making more. So it's like if you stop buying the variant covers, they'll stop making them.
And then I got a box set coming with just different covers.
The madness can end.
So I'm just trying to find the blasted creator credits here before I go into what's they're spinning these out of Justice League of America, and it took two mini. Well, no, they're not mini series. They're not announced as mini series. That's the crazy thing. These are solo series. And let's just get the come on for goodness sakes. Okay, so JLA, it's actually called like Justice League of America : Katana.
Oh God.
Yeah, no, she's been starring in Birds of Prey. Yeah. And that's going to be written by Anne Nocente with art by Alex Sanchez. So, okay.
All right.
I guess she's a minority and she's a female, so that's kind of like a twofer for DC. And fair play.
It's a katana. Everybody loves ninjas.
Everybody loves ninjas. So let's see how long it takes.
Not like it's just...
Let's see how long it takes before they kill her, because that's what they do to their minorities and females. Yep. And then, no, I'm kidding. And then the other miniseries, really unbelievable one now, written by Andrew Kreisberg with art by Pete Woods. It's JLA Vibe.
Wow.
Wow. The world we live in. Hey, am I right?
When they had like a short on Vibe or something like that, I was like, really? That was kind of odd.
Vibe is, you know, I don't know Vibe well. I just know that he's the character, he's associated, he's a member of the Justice League during like the Detroit years with Gypsy and Citizen Steel and I don't even remember who else was on the Detroit League. But I know that he's like sort of considered the character who like just like epitomized that run and its general terrible awfulness. So hey, maybe he could make him cool. No, that's Andrew Kreisberg, is actually the creator of the Arrow TV series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that shows...
You are actually enjoying that.
I actually haven't watched it yet, but I really should, because
I liked the
it
first
seems to be getting all this good press.
Yeah,
I after I left my job this week, I caught up on it, and I was just like... I actually like this.
It's definitely that first episode was definitely outside of my normal superhero paradigm. I can't say in very many early on superhero shows has the hero put someone in a reverse headlock and snap their neck. To protect their own identity for no other reason than to protect their identity. It wasn't like this person had actually, in his presence, really committed a crime worthy of death, other than he saw.
This is one thing I have heard everybody talking about.
It's a little... I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like, when you're in a world and you just come off of, like, the Batman sort of mindset where it's like, we don't kill, you know? And then, you know, Arrow in his first episode is like, you've seen me, crack!
He's... And the rest of the series, he's a douchebag, but for some reason, you're still rooting for him. I don't know.
Snap that dude's neck, Ollie. You go. Yeah.
That's hardcore.
So, these series, anyway, these announcements of Vibe and Kitana fill in some of the blanks. Do you remember, because we'd done the maths and figured out there weren't going to be, I'm sorry, the math, it is American listeners, only for our American listeners, that there weren't going to be 52 left after this newest round of cancellations.
Ah, so this is filling that in?
Yes, they're filling them in. And then another thing that also got announced, some may say DC may be doing some random shit with a Vibe and Kitana ongoing series. But truly, it's got to be one of the singularly most unpopular moves I've seen them do. It was also happened this week when they announced that what is presently their longest-running title in terms of numbers, because they did just restart everything last year, Hellblazer is ending. And that's a Vertigo title. The Vertigo title of Hellblazer is ending. But don't worry, kids! Constantine, number one, will be arriving in the DC Universe proper soon.
Boy...
I don't think DC's intended, like hoped for reaction was the mourning that has gripped comics fandom.
Oh man, back yeah.
I mean, there is not one word of positivity. DC seemed to be making a concentrated effort at the moment to diverse Vertigo from superhero properties and from anything, and just bringing anything like that into. I mean, there is already Constantine's already in the main DC universe in
Lee Dark. Yeah.
But I mean, it's not technically the same Constantine as is in the Vertigo book, because that book grew apart from the DC universe a long time ago.
We got a question. It's asking, Vertigo doesn't exist in a DCU, in the DC universe.
Well,
so Vertigo doesn't or does not?
No, for a long time now. Not for a long time. Well, a couple of years.
Okay.
I couldn't put a year amount on it, but generally Vertigo and DC have been divorced for a long time now. You know, you had Sandman, which started out as being very firmly rooted in the DC universe, and it started before Vertigo existed, and its creation essentially led to the birth of the Vertigo imprint, and it carried on all the way through there. And Hellblazer, it started out in Swamp Thing, which was part of the DC continuity, and then it transitioned into Vertigo. But they've done... more and more, like over the years, Vertigo has just done things that are totally separate from the DC universe. And we saw with the New 52, we have Animal Man, we have Swamp Thing, we have Dial H, we have Justice League Dark, books which are essentially which would have 10 years ago, maybe less, been classified like as Vertigo books. But now they're just Vertigo by any other name, because there is this very defined split, and cancelling Hellblazer and restarting it as Constantine is just like the nail in the coffin. But wow, yeah. And, wow. I mean, this doesn't, yeah. And they're putting an American writer on it as well, which seems to, like, quintessentially... Yeah, no! to quintessentially misunderstand the whole appeal of John Constantine. I have no particular attachment to John Constantine. I've never really read any of his stuff, but even I know that's not smart.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, you know...
That's not what you
that's
do.
Like that's like casting an American as Doctor Who. It's like...
That's like casting an American as John Constantine. Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, that's another thing, actually. Sticking with Constantine and Vertigo-related news. This one was last week as well, but I don't know if you guys commented on it. DC, in another... Like, in a continuing thread of staggering illogicality... thinks that they can essentially do a Justice League Dark movie.
I saw that! I was like, what?
That would be great.
Like, with no lead-in and no build-up of its separate characters, it thinks they can do, like, a Constantine, Deadman, Zatanna, Swamp Thing movie.
Well, Constantine had a movie.
Yeah, but it would hopefully not be.
I mean, it had almost nothing to do with John Constantine. But, or Hellblazer, but it was a movie that was called that.
It was. And that's like...
Do you think that Keanu Reeves reprised the role?
It is the man himself.
I know Kung Fu.
I don't understand this. On one hand I do, because I've been saying it for a little while, is that given their crushing failure with everything that's not Batman and Superman, and Superman's even on the edge, as far as their mainstream characters go, that what DC should really try to do is that they should try to pull a Blade. They should try to do like Marvel did, dial it way back to the lower end of characters, do a Doom Patrol movie, do a Metal Man movie, do something like that. I would like either of those things. So, like, do a Deadman movie, do a Swamp Thing movie, do a good Hellblazer movie.
Swamp Thing was good back in the day, though. They already had a Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing was a bad thing.
Yeah, it's just a way too old of a generation of film to be considered.
I actually saw it on TV, like, a few weeks ago, and I'm like, it is pretty cheesy. I still enjoyed it.
I can't imagine how the person in that suit didn't die.
So, but it was reported last week, but it has been confirmed now that it is more than rumor, and that Guillermo del Toro's kind of got his end in this.
I heard that,
and that does not fill me with dread, you know.
Yeah,
that
I like.
You know, personally, like I would actually. That's a really good choice. Like, if you had to like get anybody on that,
yeah.
But then, you know, I would take Guillermo del Toro on most things. But it's the nature of the film itself. Like, no separate origin build-up for any of these characters. You're just going to be plopped into... It seems symptomatic.
Especially
DC's
for
continuing.
Deadman. Like, you need a little bit
Deadman's
of build-up.
Deadman's a film on his own, you know?
Well, and, you know, who had bought... The guy that originally had the rights to Transformers...
Don Murphy.
Don Murphy. He bought the rights, the production rights to Deadman like 7 years ago. Like after he did Transformers.
Deadman's a film. You can do a film with Deadman. You don't.
That would be a good one off film.
Heck yeah, it would be. It's great. Yeah.
It's maybe a better premise for a TV series following on from that, but like as a one-off film, Deadman probably is a singular better premise for a TV series where you can do like an arc about him eventually finding his killer and string that out as an ongoing mystery over a TV series, and then of course the premise is built for because he jumps into
it's Ghost Quantum Leap is all it is.
Yeah.
Now, see, that would be a great TV series. You have John Constantine and Deadman.
Deadman jumps into someone's body. Constantine's just there and is like, "What?" Boston. Remember Boston?
Kind of a
Ziggy
buddy.
Says you're going to have to help this guy meet his true love. I'll see you later, all right?
Like a buddy cop meets Quantum Leap, but with the ethereal.
Excuse me. You know, if we keep on talking about it, I'll come true, because anything else that we've talked someone's listening in.
Hey, any day now.
Oh, man. So, wow.
Yeah, so that's an odd one. It does. It just seems like another example of DC's inherent wrong-headed attitude towards its film, where it just feels like DC seems to be possessed of the notion that its properties are strong enough that they can just be flung at the screen, and that'll do, you know, that then everybody will flock to them. But Marvel has proven that's not the case, and you do have to do this.
Because Marvel had several duds.
Oh, hell
they had
yeah!
Several duds in there before they had things that worked, so...
And DC's had a bunch of duds, but it's not learning from them.
No, it just keeps doing the same things that don't work.
I was looking up box office stuff, and you know what? Unadjusted for inflation, Green Lantern is the sixth biggest box office flop in history.
Really?
Really, and adjusted, it's still the 11th.
I didn't mind it. It's not that bad.
Every time, I swear to God.
I'm going to defend that movie.
This is like your Ghost Rider. This is your Dan Ketch.
It's like so, you and your Scarlet Spider.
But I'm so excited about... Yeah. I'm so excited about the next one-off that they've announced for Before Watchmen.
Oh, Dollar Bill? Oh. What the ever-living fuck? It's like, guys, Jesus, let it go. It's like, there's all... I don't know what's been going on. It's like, we haven't had a Before Watchmen in like 3 weeks until we got Moloch this week. Where's my Spectre, Dom? What's going on? Where'd the schedule disappear to?
Yeah, I was like, did I just not get it? You know,
are you thinking about Moloch?
Just failing like storylines, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Stuff got Moloch delayed. I got Moloch. I haven't read it yet.
Okay. Well, it's shite. So let's grant.
Well, shocked by that, of course.
Guess what? Prostitution and gambling, and he was deformed, and everything you could ever possibly have ever expected about Moloch. And I don't even know how this thing's a two-issue fucking miniseries. You'll be, Jesus. What? There's no living reason for that comic to exist. Like, even less of a reason than all of the rest of Before Watchmen. It's like, if they have no reason to exist, like, this thing, can't form cogent analogy to describe how pointless this is. And no Dollar Bill, obviously, because that's not something that could have been done in Watchmen. If Darwin Cook didn't think there was a story worth telling about Dollar Bill in Minutemen, maybe that was your clue, okay?
Yeah, because Dollar Bill has got, like, zero attention. The only thing that they've said about him is that he's just kind of a guy that they put into a suit as an advertisement for the bank. I mean, it's not like...
That's a joke! And it's like it's that wrong-headed attitude again. It's like, oh, geez, Darwin didn't give an awful lot of page time to Dollar Bill. He must have forgotten or something. We'd better do a one-shot to deal with that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the dude is a footnote. He's a joke. The only service that he provided in the original was the joke of, yeah, capes get stuck in revolving doors. They're kind of a bad idea.
Yeah. So that's dumb.
Yeah, that's
That's the news, I think.
Right. So, on that note,
the news.
Yeah.
Oh, I just actually know. It's not really comic news, but just speaking of movies and everything, I see it's been confirmed this week. It does seem that this has been in the works a lot longer than just the announcement of it last week. But Disney did announce this week Will Arndt, the scriptwriter of Toy Story 3, is going to be the scriptwriter for Star Wars Episode 7.
So that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, that's really good.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to turn in your card, Nicole.
I know. I'm just so sick of hearing about. I mean, everyone I've talked to, who's going to redirect it? Who's going to start it? What's going to? We even had Carrie Fisher in town, and she was talking about it. Like, ah!
Yeah.
It's the fact that we are getting these announcements as quickly as we are that really seem to indicate that pre-production, pre-production, or whatever stage of production you call this, like. Wheels have been turning for a while on this. If they were already ready to announce the script, I wouldn't be surprised if we had a director before the end of the year.
Yeah, but
I will enjoy the next Star Wars if, by any chance, like we were talking about before the show, there's Darth Maul, or if Liam Neeson's back. I don't know how it's going to happen.
I could see Liam Neeson turning up as a Force ghost.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Darth Maul will probably not be in it.
No.
See? That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well,
who knows, though? Who knows? There's already been a pile of expanded universe stuff that covers the post-movie period, so whether they're going to adapt that or... I don't even know. It's hard to know. I mean, this could be some of the most straight-up contradictory Star Wars stuff ever. Like, stuff that could, like, just completely buck the expanded universe.
I'd love to see Old Republic stuff. That would be, like, my thing. I'd be like, yeah, let's go Old Republic.
But it'd be cool if they could get. I mean, the three major actors of the original trilogy seem to have generally voiced the support for the notion that they could come back to do something in it. So I'd be all for that. Well, I mean, this is not bad news.
The only one that would be a lot of trouble would be like Harrison Ford, because it's not like.
What do you know? Because I mean, he didn't. It's like. He doesn't have a reason to resent Star Wars. Like,
no. And I don't say that. I'm just saying because. He works. And,
yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, while they do have, you know, a nice amount of voice work to do, and they're on, like, maybe a show occasionally, it's not like Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill are, like, you know.
I don't know about Carrie Fisher. Mark Hamill's got plenty going on, but I'm like, he and Carrie Fisher, like, have reason to resent Star Wars for kind of nipping their careers in the bud. Harrison Ford was launched by that essentially, and he went on to do many great things.
The smartest thing that he did was signed on to do Jones and Raiders right after, because it immediately made him identifiable in two different films, and then he's not like really strongly tied to one. Mm. But I still love that meme picture where it's like it's supposed to be. Harrison and Mark Hamill going over part of the script, but someone adds the line there. It's like, okay, so it's if I sign this, then I can have a career after Star Wars. Mark Hamill's like, yeah, I didn't buy it. I didn't sign it. Anyway. That's me. But he's actually working a lot. It's just, you just don't know what he's doing. You don't always recognize the work he's doing, but he does a lot of stuff. So, all right. Well, that is great. Comic news there. We are so excited about Vibe and Dollar Bill. That is just great. So, all right. Well, Nicole, since you're back, you get to start us off. What do you got for us?
All right. I decided to pick up a new relaunch or whatever, you know. I told myself I would never read a Deadpool comic because there's just too much Deadpool out there. But they've restarted it with the number one, so I picked up Deadpool, and I gotta say, it's a fun comic, man. It starts off, which is kind of ironic, because they're talking about, okay, this past week, if you're not in the United States, I'm pretty sure you heard we had elections this week.
What?
Yay! I'm so glad it's over with.
Yeah,
it starts off with how the country is falling apart, how people are divided, and there's even fights in the voting booth here. You see homeless veterans. You know, the nation's just falling apart. And so what do they do? Well, this I don't know who Madman is.
Yeah, I don't know if he is anybody. I figured it's like Deadpool. There's this guy called the Black Talon who is like a zombie guy. Uh-huh. Deadpool has fought before and laughed at vigorously, and I was a little surprised it wasn't him, because I don't think this guy was anybody.
I don't think he is anybody. I think he's just a crazy guy.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm like, am I supposed to know this guy?
No.
Because he has a S.H.I.E.L.D. uniform on.
Yeah, but he also has on a kilt, and he has an American flag.
Shorts, he's doing it wrong. He's got a kilt and a boxer shorts. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Well,
he's not a true Scotsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has like an American flag painted on his face as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of batshit crazy.
So this guy is sacrificing a lamb. So if you guys don't like that, it kind of could be a little disturbing.
I have to admit, I was it kicked off with, and I was like, I don't know why you've got me off on the wrong foot here, comic. You're gonna have to win me back after that.
Yeah. Well, he's doing this because he wants to bring back dead presidents, and well. The first one he brings back is Harry Truman. Okay. So, and that's, the thing is, this little part of the comic, I felt very Ghostbuster-ish.
It does, yeah.
It just is almost the exact same color as IDW's Ghostbusters. It has, like, the same lighted effects and stuff. So I'm like, hey, this is like Ghostbusters. So, I still enjoy it because I like Ghostbusters. So that's the premises, but you come to find out Deadpool is trying to save New York because New York is always in distress. Oh, man. I feel sorry for New Yorkers in comic books. Well, it's like a god.
In general, like they just had the hurricane. I mean, they don't even need monsters up there.
How long do you think before we get an issue of Amazing Spider-Man dealing with the terrible aftermath of the hurricane where Dr. Doom stands around and cries in the middle of the rubble?
Oh my. Oh, see what you did there.
Yes, it hurt you. It wounded you deeply.
Oh, fuck you, JMS. Anyway,
Well, this is how we're introduced to Deadpool in this new series. A Godzilla-like creature. They don't really call him Godzilla, but you pretty much know it's him. It's attacking the city. And how does he make his entrance? He splits him open, and he comes on out with guts and gore, along with Thor. Yeah. Thor was swallowed up by this creature. And there's, just like typical Deadpool, there's a lot of little tidbits, hilarity, and then again, you see a couple more dead presidents come back. I don't want to give it away because it's just a fun read, but I would say if you're going to read a Deadpool, this is a really good way to start off.
I mean, the bottom line for the thing is that Marvel superheroes can't be seen to kill dead presidents all over again.
Yeah.
So S.H.I.E.L.D. needs someone who it's okay for the public to see chopping, Roosevelt's head off or whatever. They need someone who that's okay for. So, hey, Deadpool's elected. No pun intended. And then the rest of the issue is simply Deadpool fighting zombie presidents. You get zombie...
It's awesome.
Who was it? Zombie Truman wheeling around in his chair.
Yeah, that was great.
The FDR, yeah.
But one of the great things about it is, Deadpool is really, for a character that's known for being crazy, he'd really kind of gone off the rails over the last few years. We talk about all the issues, but, where there was, like, a lot of just setup and, multiple thought bubbles talking to each other in his head. This issue has none of that, and that's a good thing. It's just
it's
Deadpool.
Like an ice pleasant orgasm that I could pick up Deadpool comic and not have to deal with this Bugs Bunny with guns bullshit that has defined Deadpool for the last couple of years. And to be fair, the whole talking caption boxes in Way's run was never actually about breaking the fourth wall. The caption boxes represent the voices that he hears inside his own crazy head, although that was never a thing before Way's run.
Right.
But embodying them in different caption boxes carried on the whole idea of, I'll go easy on this because I did it whenever we talked about the Deadpool video game trailer. It's like nerds on the internet and video game bros have this weird twisted version of Deadpool that they never read a Deadpool comic. They just understand these elements of Deadpool because geeks and nerds and internet basement dwellers have plucked a few out of context panels, turned them into recurrent memes across image boards and message boards. And people think this is what Deadpool is about, when Deadpool has never been predominantly about breaking the fourth wall or anything like that. And the way it's dominated the public interpretation of Deadpool, and Way's run has been nothing more than just Deadpool doing outrageous shit for 60 issues. And admittedly, this is, I'm not saying this is not outrageous, but it's easily the funniest Deadpool comic that I've read since Way started writing Deadpool. And it's got none of the made-up multiple voices things that came out of nowhere when he started writing it. I mean, this, as far as I'm concerned, like this, it has the potential to be, if it not has not already reached, Joe Kelly level Deadpool. This is fucking good Deadpool.
Yeah.
It is. And there's just a few things in the last two pages. First of all, I think it's John Adams you see in a clown rainbow wig, which I thought was hilarious.
Just, identify a president.
Yeah, you see all the presidents together, and they're pick all these dead presidents, and they're picking on Jimmy Carter, who's still alive.
Yeah. I realize that's the problem. I don't know presidents.
And then, of course, they're talking about, you're going to love when Bill Clinton joins you.
God. Yeah, Reagan in the beer mug hat with with the, you're dead when we say you're dead, Jimbo.
Well.
And then the best part is the very last page where Abraham Lincoln gets his revenge.
God.
Oh my God.
I wanted to do that.
I won't spoil it, but I shouldn't. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys. Okay. Basically, Abraham Lincoln is in behind Deadpool and gets to shoot him in the back of the head. And he says, I've always wanted to do that.
Dear, dear, dear.
I think the most disturbing...
I guess that shit's awesome.
The disturbing thing of the previous panel is Taft in the bathtub, I think. That's the most disturbing piece of that. But, I mean, just some of the early dialogue that's in this, like this, like the sequence here with Thor, where Thor's like, we will never speak of this misadventure. And was it, he's like, yep, no blabbing, blogging, or tweeting about our Marvel team-up. We did not team up. Got you, partner.
Like, or, I really enjoyed Zombie Truman wheeling around. I've got a new deal for you. Die! You have nothing to fear but fear itself. And me!
I love this issue. Again, the artwork is crazy. It's great.
Yeah.
And it does remind me of IDW Ghostbusters a lot, but I love it. So it's a lot of fun.
Or Terry Moore doing the art?
And what?
Is it Tony Moore or Terry Moore doing the art? I always mix them.
Tony Moore that's doing the art.
It's Tony Moore of the first arc of The Walking Dead. Yes.
Ah, oh, okay.
First volume of Walking Dead,
You know what? I might have to, you know, X one off and go against my promise. I probably will start being have this as a poll because this issue is just so much fun.
You know, and I'm interested to see what the reaction is though, because to your point about what people think of Deadpool, this is a departure from what Deadpool has been. So
you still get violence and crazy shit, but like it just better. And not as just Bugs Bunny with guns and a death wish, down the way stuff. You know, the best issue of Deadpool I've read in 5 years.
Yeah,
And
it's only, and there's only one book, so there's only one book to read. Yay!
That's the thing that was like, there is still what's really good about this is that there's still Deadpool still has popularity, although the bubble popped pretty hard a year or two back. When they did the Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe miniseries a couple of months ago, that shit sold out. And when every issue went back for another printing in it, they made Marvel realize that, you know, there is still demand for Deadpool if you do it at the right scale, which is to say not giving him four ongoing series running simultaneously. So we do have this new Deadpool Killustrated miniseries coming up in a month or two where he's going to travel through all the great pieces of American literature and killing his way through Moby Dick and all the rest of it. So there's whether or not is Cullen Bunn doing that? I think Cullen Bunn's doing that, and Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe was pretty good as well. I mean, it did wind up just being Deadpool does wacky fourth wall bullshit for four issues, and I'm like, if we could get like a series that just doesn't have him talking to himself. Just has him being wacky and not like literally insane inside his own head. Like, and I think we're well on our way to recapturing what made the Joe Kelly run great. You know, I could see some darks, and we can get some properly dark stuff creeping in here as well. The same way Joe Kelly did, not just completely playing the character for laughs, giving more than one dimension.
Yeah,
and I think we're well on our way here. This is a very good start.
Good job, Marvel.
Very good. Good yes. Job.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good.
Good start.
See, we can say positive things about Deadpool here.
Yeah. See? Well, they just had to redo him. They've done it well.
They just had to give him a break and fix him.
I can't wait to see what they do with the dead president.
Oh, that is going to be a funny storyline. I'm excited.
I'm waiting for Bush and Obama to come in.
Oh, my God. It could happen, though.
I know.
Okay. All right. So you're good. You got it. Ready to move on.
Recovered. I'm ready to move.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Just didn't know if you had any final.
I will mention Transformers Regeneration had a really good fight scene in it, though.
Oh.
There you go.
That was about all it had.
Yeah. I like the fight scene.
Okay, so two things I'm going to talk about real quick. The first one, or one thing I'm going to talk about quick, one may take a little bit more time. First is going to be, I do want to push out there.
That's what she said.
I picked up, there's a local, couple guys, local creators, a comic called Nadir's Zenith, and... It's you never know what you're going to get, I think, sometimes with local or you know, independent. But this is really good. It's all black and white, but pencils and stuff are really nice. The art's good. It is by Jackson Compton and Jerry Bennett. So if you're in Oklahoma City, and I know I've got a few listeners in Oklahoma City, you should pick it up. If you haven't picked it up, it's on the wall there at New World and other places. But you can order online as well, and I'll try to put a link out, at least on my, but I'll put it out on Fanboy Versus as well. So if you're not local, you can order a copy, and there's digital available as well. It's kind of a future space series. It talks about, humans taking flight and going out to other places. It seems like sort of a straightforward guy's going to probably go somewhere, you know, where there's aliens and shenanigans will happen. And then you get to the last page, and you're like, what? What just happened? And so it's got a really nice hook at the end. So definitely at least pick up the first issue, try it out, see if it'll be your flavor. I've got the second issue.
And you said you could find this online, right?
Yes. Yeah, there is digital available. It's being published through Kablam, which is a digital printing and distribution. I actually had looked at them for stuff as well, so... you can order through their website and I believe others as well. So, but like I said, I'll put some links out on the Twitter and stuff after the show so that everybody can get to it. Because you got to check it out, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you can always find good stuff. It's just you have to be able to get to it. And that's the wonder of our modern sort of world of comics is that, you know, it's not just something you have to actually get your hands on the physical copy anymore. So, it's cool. All right, so there's that. I'm going to talk about something we haven't talked about on the show in ages, which is Defenders. Defenders had a really strong start, and then it sort of went, what?
A little bit.
It just kind of got really confusing in the middle. And it really took until this last issue where it finally all fell into place. Maybe it fell into place earlier for others, but it really fell into place for me with this last issue. And even enough that I went and like grabbed the first three so I could go back and go, now, wait a minute, how did it go? And so the series has led up to the end where... there's the Death Celestial is basically destroying, well, everything. And they...
Now, you may have noticed while reading other Marvel comics that the world has not ended.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, what the hey?
That's a thing.
Yeah. So it's like, well, if that's happening, then why is this? So yeah. Everything finally gets explained basically here. Most of the issue is really just explaining what has been going on and what this has all led up to. Which is that we've had the convergence engines, and that was the first thing that we ran into. It's what, if you go all the way back to the beginning of the series, you'll remember that Null was heading to Wondergor to get to one of these convergence engines. And important. It was after that that our group of defenders thought it would be fun to steal it. And that's what started everything going wrong. And we get explained why finally here, which is that in the multitude of universes, eventually the Death Celestials break through the veil and destroy everything. But there are those who stood against the Death Celestials and fared pretty well. And so these group,
Presters.
Yeah, the Presters.
That's what we call them in this universe.
That's what we call them in this universe. Started to piece together a universe that would succeed. And uses the convergence engines to sort of hold that world together. And that's what the Marvel Universe is. It's why everything converges on Earth, because the convergence engines literally converge all of those realities.
Well, they're not called the convergence engines. They're called the concordance engines.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Concordance engines. Get it right. Until the wrath of McFeely.
I know.
Not the rip the other side of your metaphor.
No. But, That's fine. It's still the same thing. It still carries. But essentially, that's what it does. It sort of pastes these worlds together into, like, our universe. And it sort of answers that question of, like, why does shit always go down on Earth? Well, there you go. But when they took the Concordance engine, they sort of fucked up the machinery. And hence, that's why everything started to go wrong. So, at the end of this episode, or issue, basically, Doctor Strange goes back in time and fixes everything. And he fixes it by not giving himself a heads up on what was going to happen. If you go back to, like, the original, the first issue, he was drinking tea at a coffee shop the morning after he had shagged this student, and his spirit self altered the way the tea fell on the paper to basically change the message. And, yeah.
He changed his destiny.
He changed his own destiny.
Yeah. So back in the first issue, there's like a reading where he hangs a teabag over a newspaper and the droplets spelt out the word rage, which was how he knew the Hulk was coming. But now, like, he watches himself doing, he influences the teabag so it spells out girl instead. So he, rather than just let the girl be, he goes to make amends and...
Yeah. So very nice in there. But because he didn't do that, that kept Hulk from getting let in the house, and Hulk goes and talks to other people, which basically changed the whole outcome. And it's like, and I had to think about it for a second, because then I went, well, wait a minute, then what was it that happened with Null? Well, with
something
Null,
else.
Well, no, the same thing, because what happened in issue 3 is when Null showed up at the Concordance engine, that awoke the Prester, and Prester sent him off somewhere else. So The defenders didn't need to be there. The only thing that served was to make them aware of the Concordance engine. So by changing that, it altered needing to bring the defenders in, and therefore made that universe go away. Amazing!
It all looped around.
It did, and it was like, wow!
I'm not entirely sure whether or not it was supposed to loop around this quickly. Because I'm not sure if this was supposed to be a 12-issue story or not, or if it's just been truncated because of Marvel now, or the fact that it hasn't really succeeded.
Or it got drug out or something. I don't know.
No, I thought this was supposed to end at 12 issues.
Well, I mean, I don't know, honestly. I mean, it is ending at 12 issues, but I'm not sure if I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, given the fact that the whole issue is completely given over to one kind of explanation and then another kind of explanation, and the idea of, like, the last charge against the bad guys, which would play out really nice if this was a film, didn't work so well in a series of silent 1, 2, 3, 7 panels, you know, 6 panels.
Yeah.
I just when I picked up the comic there, when you started talking about it, I had to flip through it and remind myself whether or not we actually saw that.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I it's interesting. It's, I don't know. I mean, I like it as far as, like, I like it as the big picture idea of it. I like that.
Yeah.
I think I like the story overall. I don't know if I like it all. I don't know if it's sort of like the bits were less than the whole, you know.
It was like a very rambling piecemeal series where we would get, like, that entire weird issue that was just like all 1960s spy stuff, which was essentially just dedicated to them bringing Nick Fury onto the team for, what, 2 issues, 3 issues, you know?
For no apparent reason.
For no basic reason, yeah, I know. It's like, it's not like you didn't have enough characters on, which is why this makes me wonder, it's like, was this supposed to end at this point?
Yeah.
When you go out of your way to add, like last issue, or was it the issue before, I don't even remember, when they throw Ant-Man in there, and I'm like, well, why? You've already got, like, 7 characters on your team. Why are you adding more whenever the end is just around the corner, you know? I mean, this is not, issue 4 is still a contender for one of the best single issues of the year.
Yeah.
The Doctor Strange issue.
Yeah.
But it was a very haphazard piecemeal series that just I mean, I've heard some people speak really highly of it, but it just never clicked for me. But I feel comfortable enough saying that now that we've reached the end, that it wasn't another example of the bad Matt Fraction.
No, this was good Matt Fraction. So I think I feel like he at least has a good idea of how to write a sort of out there story. You know, that it's not all hipster.
know? Well, hopefully that'll carry over well to Fantastic Four next week.
And that was my point, that I hopefully this kind of story, you know, this kind of proves that he can write some quirky, you know, sci-fi sort of storytelling beyond cool guys. So, so I think it gives a lot of hope for Fantastic Four. I like how it, the end really go like, oh, it all makes sense now. I get it. We're in the Matrix. So, you know, so it's cool, but I like it. So, you know, it's one of those deals where it's like, read the first 3 issues and then skim till about issue 11 and then read like 11 and 12 and then you're good.
Yeah, because like so much of the stuff that actually happens in between has just like so little bearing. It's like Fraction uses it as a chance to just follow up on some stuff left over from the unfinished Immortal Iron Fist series he did with Brubaker. And I was like, why is John Aman in this? Oh, he's got an engine. That's great. He was on a team with a load of other characters who ultimately have like Namor's dad and mom were on a team with John Aman and Captain Nemo. And I'm sure there were 1 or 2 other characters in there who were new characters. And I'm like, well, why? What was the point of all of that? All it established was that there was another engine, you know? Right. All of these random twisting ideas that ultimately have basically no payoff at the very end.
I mean, I guess you could see it as what he was trying. Maybe, you know, if there was a point, it was that they figured out that you can't move the engines. You know, that moving the engines and screws things up. So somehow,
yeah. I'm like, why does it have to be a weird team of former super adventurers with their own stories that we're never going to hear here?
Right. I don't know. Other than to just be a lesson of like, I tried to tell you not to mess with it.
Well, I mean, it's the fact that he went out of his way to pull up characters from Immortal Iron Fist, a character who I might add had already been playing a role in Brubaker's Secret Avengers, where he had none of this megalomania going on.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, anyway. I didn't say it was fantastic. I just said it was good. So, all right. So
definitely one. I think your summation of the parts are lesser than the whole is quite accurate, I think.
He had a great idea, great outline. I don't know that it really carried through in all the middle bits. But hey, I like the little liner stuff at the bottom. It had, you know, it tried something really different. And if anything, it gets props for, you know, trying to do things in book a little bit different. So, all right. That's you, sir. What do you got?
Okay, well, I don't think that I could let this episode pass without covering it. It's not fair. It's not fair, Marvel. It's like last week, you made me talk about the end about the end of Hickman's Fantastic Four and the end of Gillen's journey into mystery. This week, you got to make me talk about the last issue of Avengers Academy. It's like, what did I do to you? Do I not give you enough money? Like,
to say
So, the final issue of Avengers Academy.
Oh, bring back those 80s songs. Mm, yay! Yeah.
Bring back Avengers Academy. by the usual team of Chris Dossiers with Tom on the art. And it is certainly a final issue. You know, it comes at a point in time in the book's run where a finale does not seem out of place, but at the same time does not seem like it is necessary either, if you know what I mean.
It's like, all right, we're done. Cool.
We're done. Yeah, let's wrap things up.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's like, it's not that there are any major outstanding plots to wrap up. They have the whole Jeremy Briggs thing, which has been running since the start of the book's second year. So that's been wrapped up, and this issue is essentially entirely dedicated to not wrapping up, but sort of paying off or tying off a lot of the ongoing characters, relationships, and interactions, you know. And it starts with a little jump forward where Hazmat, in front of the assembled students of the academy, tells the staff that they have known since day one that they were recruited because they were the most dangerous and most likely to be villains. So tight start, you know. But then the rest of the issue does, as I say, it simply plays out as these things where Finesse and X-23 have it out over the fact that Finesse used the unconscious X-23 to kill Jeremy Briggs. Those characters' friendships has been one of the series' really great ideas. The way these two people are really cut off from human emotion, and have never really had anyone that understands them properly, finally found somebody that they could relate to, and they grew as people as a result of that. Like, that was really, really good stuff, and it was real Bechdel test passing stuff as well, you know, two girls who weren't just talking about a bloke all the time. So that does not have a happy ending, unfortunately. And then pretty much all the other ones are about how characters get themselves a little loving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was tasteful.
No, I'm not criticizing it at all. I'm just saying, everybody gets a little sum-sum. It's like Stryker finally puts his personal life ahead of his self-promotion shock tactic celebrity persona when he accepts an invitation from a gay kid to go to his school prom with him, and he makes peace with his scars and everything. Hazmat and Metal, having seen that some people have it worse than they do, are now comfortable in their own skins after giving their powers back, and they finally get to make love. Hooray. Julie Pyre and Carolina from Runaways get their Mac on. It seems like there's something brewing between White Tiger and Reptil, and Finesse almost walks in on that. And of course, Finesse and Reptil are supposed to have a kid in the future, so that a lot of the issue is Finesse just walking through and catching glimpses of all of this, and realizing, finally feeling friggin' emotions. Which there's a payoff there. She sits down next to Quicksilver as he's watching Downton Abbey, and she just starts to cry, and it's like, whoa, oh, my heart, what's happening?
I love this line where he was watching it, and he's like, my sister finds it enjoying, and I find it tedious.
I find everything tedious. This is true. Yes. And everybody gets themselves a little something-something, and then in response to... to Hazmat, and then we jump forward back to where we were, where the last issue, Pym told the characters that he was planning something to reward them, and it's that they're going to be promoted to Avengers third grade, up from this trainee status to levels of ascendance to full fledged Avengeriness, and that prompts Hazmat to make her little outburst, and everybody just reinforces that that may have been how it was at the start, but it's changed. No, you are better than that. We realize you have made yourselves better, you know. And they set up the what is it called? They want the kids to continue what Briggs was trying to do, his humanitarian approach to superheroism, but done in the right way. And they all agree to do that, and it's all good. It's just all a very, very happy ending for everybody. Even Finesse finds out that she can use, despite having alienated everybody, and that she has gained something from it in her own way. It is almost sad for Finesse. Like, they all get like enhanced security clearance and everything as being full Avengers. So she uses it to start studying more data, and so she can get better in that way, because that's all Finesse has, and it's quite sad, really. Mm-hmm. Oh, but it's not quite as bad for everybody as it is for Vale, who they probably should have spoken to first. Ant-Man says, and it says, it's like everybody whose parents are still alive, take one step forward. Oh, not so fast. It's kind of like that, where they tell her, it's like, yeah, you don't have your powers anymore, so you really can't be part of the academy and part of this foundation unless it's as staff, and you got to go back to school for that. And she's like, ho hum. And then the great thing is that I do love how this is how the series ends, where it began, with Vale as a normal person back in school facing all of the horrible things that American high school brings upon you, and then turning around and kicking everybody's ass.
Yeah.
Very, very gratifying final scene where she knocks the ever-living shit out of some stuck-up bully cheerleader types. And even, like, just drops a jock as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I think, hooray! And I'm like, wait a minute. You're using violence. And that's how supervillains get started. And I wonder if that's the intent of the first page, of the last page, where it's like, she's really kind of knocking these kids around in an overly violent way, and I'm like, this is not how any Peter Parker never did this shit. I'm like, I'm a little worried if I don't know if that's the intended reading of it or not, but I feel like my immediate reaction is, fuck your ass, get your ass, you know, because who's never wanted to be able to do this, you know? But then my brain starts working, and I'm like,
I mean, it's a great bookend, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It's like, on the other side of it, it's like, well,
because that was something that I think, you know, by the writer's own admission, I would say, just kind of slipped more and more into the background as an initial hook. It just never really quite seemed like it had anywhere to go after a while. And then there was that great payoff at the end of the final exam arc where Finesse killed Jeremy Briggs, and I was like, oh, dude,
yeah,
you bring it. And I was like, oh, so there's that back again. You know, there's the idea that these guys are going to be bad guys. It just hasn't been at the fore for a long time now. Basically, since they changed up the book like 20 issues ago. The second half of the book's 3.5-year run. It just hasn't quite been part of it, because so many members of the Academy, that's not been their thing.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's the intended reading or not, but it's where my brain started to go a little while afterwards, as I thought a little bit more about it. And the final letters page is just given over to an essay from Gage saying goodbye. And that's, you know, that's the end of Avengers Academy. Another book, that's another book that's been with us since very much the start of Fanboy Versus, that I have been championing all along. I mean, and I would have to say, like, as a final issue in and of itself, it is just a lot of characters standing around talking, and I mean, it's a final issue. Like, it's not even indicative of all the greatest strengths of the book. It's just a very solid character piece that provides a fairly cathartic end for anybody who's followed these characters all the way through. Like, as an isolated piece of reading, I probably wouldn't, if this wasn't the last issue, I probably wouldn't pick it out to talk about it. There's nothing truly standout-ish about it. But as a final issue, it's just another one in the last couple of weeks that makes my heart heavy.
Yeah.
So if you're enjoying something, make sure McFeely is not reading it.
Right. Yeah, because I the death.
You've been the Black Hammer for stuff.
Yeah, maybe I don't want you to read Turtles.
Well, I haven't yet. So.
Do not start reading Scarlet Spider, okay? Just,
okay.
Just yeah. It's like, you said it. You have to keep it.
Yeah, fare thee well, Avengers Academy. I am quite looking forward to, with some measure of concern and fear, Avengers Arena. Because this Teen Avengers slot for Marvel has consistently been pumping out some of my favorite titles. Okay, well, there have only been two, so fuck it. But I'm consistently one of the books that I most look forward to each month for... Where are we now? 4 to 4 years? It couldn't just be 4 years, because that was post... When did that start? No, that started the Civil War. No, five years now. 5 years. Five or six years.
Wow.
Yeah. From the initiative all the way through to Academy. And that's, you know, the initiative started with Slott. Gage came on and co-wrote from issue 13 onwards before taking the book over on its own. Gage has been in this Teen Avenger slot delivering one of the books that I most look forward to every month. So I'm a little afraid of Avengers Arena if it's going to be all these cult favorite characters of mine dying. But
yeah,
I'm
that
just
doesn't sound...
Not, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But that's out next month, and I will be talking about it.
Cool. Well,
Frosted.
That brings us to the end of the show, where I'm gonna talk about this.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about it.
I didn't get to read it.
That's okay. But I'm going to talk about a thing at the end of the show. Not give it to Chris McFeely. Like,
hey, I'm okay with that.
Because this is Iron Man, and like, you know, I've been a fan of Iron Man for quite a while. I mean, I don't dare claim hardcore status, but I like Iron Man a lot. It was one of the first comics I actually received on a regular basis once. So,
I gave up on Iron Man when Extremis started. I trudged through a hell of a lot of shit. After Kurt Busiek left Iron Man in 2000-ish. Then you had the Joe Quesada run, which I enjoyed the first arc of and hated the rest of it. And then progressively, more and more and more after that, it was just the evils of the world, drunkenness, corporate raiders and shit, where, you know, some of my earliest exposure to Iron Man after the cartoon series in the 90s was the Heroes Return Iron Man series by Kurt Busiek, where we got Mandarin and Spymaster and Ghost and Ultimo and all of this superhero stuff. You know, it wasn't all just, oh, corporate raider business, drunkenness, drugs, terrorism, stuff. And there was an awful lot of bad, bad stuff that followed Kurt Busiek's run. And eventually when it hit Warren Ellis's, they restarted it from number one for Warren Ellis and Extremis. And then it started to get so lit. And I was like, you know what? Saw this. And I have not read Iron Man since. Although I did read the first volume of Matt Fraction's stuff. And it is good stuff, but it was never enough to tempt me all the way back to getting Iron Man.
Well, like, when I was reading, I still screw up, like, what the date was. So I don't know what the time, but I know, like, some of it was, like, trying to get his company back. That was, like, in that time when we talk about the other character, the Stone, Eli Stone?
Oh, yes, Tiberius.
Tiberius Stone. In that time period. There was
Frank Thierry's run.
There was a great couple of issues in there where he met, like, a woman that... Where he met... Well, there was, like, his suits, like, his first version of his suits. They kind of rewrote part of his origin where he had made, like, these suits that the Vietnam... Or I guess it was...
I honestly don't remember.
It was kind of fun. There was a cyborg chick that came out of that.
I really don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if that character died at the end of that. I can't remember. But yeah, there was a little bit there. There was like a really interesting story in there where it was like the thing that they were trying to steal was like an early version of what would become the Iron Man suit. But it was screwed up. It had like it would administer like medication and stuff. And so if you were in the suit, it would keep you alive and not feeling pain even though you were dying.
Oh, that sounds a little familiar, yeah, where it's like, yeah. It sounds vaguely familiar. Because, no, I mean, I know I've read that, but I have zero recall.
Because the chick, she put the suit on to, like, defend her city, and then she got blown up, and then the suit started to, like, inflict pain and punishment to make her rebuild herself. It was messed up. Anyway,
I think that was Mike Grail's run, which came after Frank Thierry's run, which came after Joe Quesada's run. Yeah. That was before he became Secretary of Defense.
Yes, it was before.
Was that John Ney Reber?
But he also fought Mandarin Sun in there too. And
oh my God, what the hell was that like? I got really hung up on that because the Mandarin Sun got his dad's rings when they were presented. I didn't mind the idea of the Mandarin Sun, you know, but he got them presented to him in a box on his father's own severed hand.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not where those rings were the last time we saw them. Last time we saw, they said they recovered his hands from the wreckage of the Mandarin super weapon from the Mandarin storyline during Kurt Busiek's arc. And I'm like, he wasn't wearing his rings then. Shut up!
Yeah.
And I was just really stymied my complete enjoyment of that story arc because he wasn't wearing his magic rings then.
But he didn't even use the
rings. This couldn't have happened.
He didn't even use the rings for the first part of that run, though.
I remember thinking how insane it was that the Mandarin did that thing in Busiek's Iron Man in 98. And then that was it for the Mandarin until... it was like a decade before the Mandarin came back. It's crazy.
Yeah, they did the bit with the Sun, and then
The Sun stood in to be like the next Mandarin because he didn't have a name. His name was just Temujin, so then he was like Mandarin too.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's insane that somebody's arch villain could be just gone for 10 years because nobody could figure out what to do with him eventually. It degenerated. They tried to it used to be capitalism versus communism, and then it evolved into Asian myth versus Western tech. And then Kurt Busiek was just like, I'm gonna make a giant robot dragon. Woo!
That's cool.
Well, but
it was
cool.
And then it was like nobody could figure out what to do with the Mandarin for 10 years.
Mandarin's one of those villains though that he is sort of it would take someone really creative to like recreate him in such a way that it would be workable and interesting, because it's like for a while he was very stuck in that like late 60s early 70s, you know, it's like crazy guy with crazy rings.
Can look forward to him next year when Iron Man 3 comes out.
Yeah, but they're going like a different route because now he's more like a terrorist and it's going to be like versus capitalism and stuff again. It looks like a good movie.
Yeah, it's all an outgrowth of where the world is now. I mean, the Mandarin is probably one of the most like overtly politically skewed villains of Kirby and Lee and Kirby's early like 1960s period. Mm-hmm. So hey, why not rework him to work with today's politics? They've already in the movie verse like relocated Tony's origin from, you know, war torn hotspot of the 1960s to war torn hotspot of the 2000s.
Right.
So I'd work the Mandarin in with that. It's fine with me. I don't care.
No, it's fine.
I'm like at the point where I really just don't friggin' care as long as I get the Mandarin in a film.
Yes, we're seeing
where McPhew's priorities lie here.
Well, you know, there's some things that when you get an Iron Man movie, you're just expecting, and
it's true. You know, it's like if there loads of other characters I would not be so blasé about it at all, and I would be annoyed if they weren't faithful or whatever. But with this, I recognize that a large portion of the character's whole deal is just not workable right now, and I'm okay with just controlling it completely if I get him in a film.
Well, and that's the thing, is like Iron Man has so few, you know, villains. Iron Man recognizable villains, you know.
None.
Yeah, other than Mandarin.
That does look like another Iron Man, that is.
Yeah.
Well, something else in a suit.
How many Iron Man villains don't look like Iron Man himself?
Yeah. Whiplash.
He's got other guys in suits, and then the entirety of the rest of his rogues gallery, who are, you know, there's some cool characters in there, but they are all grunt level.
And dead.
Everyone is a bank.
Whiplash has been
bank robbing. Thug.
Yeah, Whiplash has been dead since the sentient armor, you know, and they've tried to throw other villains at him, like MODOK and other stuff.
But not for an awfully long time. No. Like, that was the thing, is like, after Busiek...
I would love to see MODOK on the screen.
Oh, God, I would love that.
Oh, God.
After Busiek in the late 90s, there just weren't any supervillains in Iron Man, like, at all, for like a decade.
Yeah.
They just didn't do supervillains anymore. And I remember it was early 2000s or mid-2000s. They did a miniseries. It was Iron Man... Oh, what's this called? I don't even remember the title of it because it wasn't a great miniseries. But it was it was about the new Spymaster getting like the Living Laser and maybe Blizzard, some just a bunch of Iron Man baddies together and going, Iron Man thinks he's so big now that he's the Secretary of Defense that he doesn't have to deal with supervillains anymore. Well, we're going to show him what's what. Like, it actually became so pronounced and such a thing that they dedicated a story to dealing with the fact Iron Man doesn't do supervillains anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's something that sort of slowly changed a bit as time has gone on, but it's like, if you expect Iron Man never fight a supervillain, it's nearly always the Crimson fucking Dynamo, because it's like, hey, somebody from another country who's also wearing armor.
Yeah, that, or you get like the knockoff Titanium Man, like, you know.
Anyway, we better talk about this.
Yeah, let's talk about this comic. So we start out Gillen's run with like awesome, where it's just like this sort of internal monologue about.
Hang on, what's the story? What's the title of the story first?
What was it? Oh, Demons and Genes.
No.
Genesis? What?
Genies.
Genies. Why did genies. I have to...
No, but what's the thing about demons and genies as far as Iron Man goes? They're things that come in bottles.
Bottles, yes.
Mm. Ah!
Ah.
Yeah. Demon of the Bot.
Yeah.
Siren alcoholism story arc.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Bottles.
Right.
Gotcha. I see where you're going with this.
I don't know why I want to say Jay. Anyway, so he's talking about belief and, you know, is sort of the opening part of this, but what? No, okay. I mean, it's nothing more but sort of a monologue about belief and what he believes in, like himself and a future, you know, sort of like hopeful, and how, you know, hope, you know, being optimistic does things while being pessimistic doesn't.
Cool. I mean, the idea with this, it's kind of weird that it is not mentioned at all here. But the idea is that this, and Iron Man's newfound interest in faith and his questioning about this sort of stuff, is supposed to be an outgrowth of Avengers versus X-Men.
Mm. Yeah.
Avengers versus X-Men didn't deal with it, like, at all until, like, the last issue, where Iron Man is all like, ah, yeah, Phoenix, magic, faith and shit. And that was the height of, like, the lead-in. But it was played with a little bit more when he got... sometime in, I think, the third issue of AVX Consequences, but it just, Gillen wrote that as well. So that's where this is coming from, although, I mean, I guess if you didn't read AVX, like, this is why they've written it this way, so anybody can pick up the graphic novel and not have to worry about it, but that's where this is coming
from. And I'll just go ahead and stop right here and say the art is beautiful. In places.
in places. Yeah. That's a lovely sunset skyline.
I don't know if I like
that's
the faces.
Some kind of hideous, like... rictus grin. Yeah.
As long as there's not a face, it's great. Yeah.
Welcome to Greg Land. Are you not acquainted with Greg Land?
I am now.
Yeah, you are. Greg Land is easily one of the most divisive, loathed artists going. And there are people who are actively not buying this book because Greg Land is drawing it, because he... Well, you know, photo referencing is the polite way of doing it, but there's, you know, proof you'll find out there that he just traces this shit straight up from photos.
Yeah, as long as it's not a person or a face.
And everybody always has a horrific, like, rictus grin. Unless like, another emotion is expressly called for.
Yeah.
Hideous screaming grins.
Yeah, no, I did notice that. The art, but, I mean... I guess, and that's why I say, like, I like the art for Iron Man, because he doesn't have a face. So
I mean, he's
fine.
Probably just tracing movie stills. But,
wow. Well, that one is for sure. But, you know, Skyline's pretty.
Yeah. Greg Land, everybody.
All right, well, there you go. Anyway, the action scenes are fun. Anyway, okay, so we're out at a bar. And I like this. Actually, they're at MJ's, which is even better. I just realized that.
Yeah.
That's, hey, it's a universe, people.
That's MJ's from Amazing Spider-Man.
Amazing Spider-Man.
It should be like a little footnote. Just go read Amazing Spider-Man.
Go read Amazing Spider-Man, since we're at MJ's. Yeah, but he's kind of trying to pick up a chick, which is great because, like, she goes off to pick up drinks and Pepper's like, it's not going to work out. And she's like, I just want to do him. I don't really care that it's not going to work out. which I'm sure Pepper loves, but, of which she even tries to, like, Pepper even tries to warn Tony, and Tony's response is like, is she Spymaster?
Probably not. Then I don't care.
So, yeah. What was the other line in here? It's like, she's, that woman's deceitful. And he's like, yeah, yes. That bra is highly padded. Ah, Tony. So, yeah. Anyway, they have a discussion about the future of the company, and he just doesn't care. It's not that he doesn't care. It's like he's just trying to... He's got this whole, you know, faith
he's
thing.
Having a midlife crisis.
He's having a midlife crisis is basically what's happening. Meanwhile, in Buenos Aires, some woman is standing
a
on...
A passing catalog model.
A passing catalog model is standing on a street for some reason, grinning...
Posing for a camera.
Right,
like, hold
at
my
you.
God, are you kidding me? Like...
Yeah. And then a woman climbs out of a manhole and punches her in the face, and something explodes, and she takes her phone. And then something explodes out of the ground, and it's a name!
Guy.
She sends a message and then gets torched.
She did.
She's very dead. That's a true thing. See, like, that page has no faces on it.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty good.
Yeah,
I don't know
what
it's traced from, but it looks pretty good. So meanwhile, Tony's going to try and shag this chick and then gets a message from the chick who's just got burned to death and says, by the way, I'm dead. And Extremis is on the loose.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh. Oh, shit. So Tony's got to go. And so we get filled in, I guess, for those of us who don't know anything about who that chick would have been.
For those of us who did not, well, I mean, you wouldn't have recognized her based on the art anyway, because it's probably traced from Neve Campbell. But this is a favorite model of Greg Land. No, this is not her. Although he did bang her once, like, because she was a woman in an Iron Man comic, so, like...
Yeah, I mean, is there a vagina present?
Yes. This is Maya Hansen from the original Warren Ellis Extremist story arc, who has just died.
Mm.
So, hey, it's no surprise that we've got an Extremist-centered story as the first arc of this... Oh, and she'll be able to pump a trade off in about 7 months' time.
Huh,
what's out in about 7 months' time? It's got Extremis in it? I don't know.
Huh.
Oh, yeah, there's a film, isn't
there's
there?
There's a movie, isn't there?
Yeah.
Extremis version 2. And this guy is Colin 44. What?
Hmm?
How's your last name 44?
What do you what?
This dude at the Extremist sales convention, buy your super soldier today. His name is Colin.
Oh well, that's probably just because AIM has like five names for all their dudes or something.
I don't know. There's you know there's
okay, that's
Chad
the
O'Tricking.
Thing. That's the thing I didn't know. I'm not as familiar with AIM, so
I don't know.
Okay, so he's Colin 44. Good for him. You too could buy Extremis today and, you know, tailor it to your needs to blow up the world or whatever.
AIM is one of several people who have the Extremis technology and are now telling it.
Yeah. And there's a shadowy figure in the background with a briefcase. But it can't be Tony Stark.
He's got no mustache.
He's got no mustache. Of which even Tony goes off on how easy it is for him to be in disguise, because all he has to do is shave. And suddenly no one knows who he is.
I have a biochemist friend who swears he has a solution, can regrow it in a couple of hours.
Yeah, well, because I'm sure it'll be back in the next issue.
Yeah.
But what's funny is they don't pick up on his identity, but they do pick up on the shield virus that he's, you know, using to, like, block part of their system. So they want to see what's in his briefcase. And it's Terminator 2.
Yeah.
It's a briefcase full of, like, a liquid metal thing, which, you know, is kind of cool. He calls it, like, a putty, like a smart putty that conforms to a predetermined shell, but mainly used for testing. But it also, I guess, is kind of nifty for, you know, carrying around when you don't want to wear your armor, but I didn't think you had to wear it anyway, so I didn't really understand that part.
What?
I don't understand. I thought his armor was in his body now.
No, the armor is not in the body. Just like, I'm not even sure where he is extremist-wise as far as, the armor is not in his body. Just a subdermal sheath that's the interface between the armor and his brain is stored in the hollows of his bones, comes out in liquid metal form, surrounds him with like a gold second skin, and the armor actually latches onto that. And that's the direct connection between the armor through his nervous system into his brain.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's not... No, it's not in his body. And he refers to a subdermal ghost of an exoskeleton here, so I'm not sure if like that's supposed to be that, or I don't know like if he still had Extremis before this issue. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought he did. Anyway. So yeah.
And I just haven't been paying a hell of a lot of attention to the last end of Fraction's run, so I mean I don't know if he actually lost it or not.
So so he goes fighting some Extremis bad guys, and they're kind of badass. They've got like fire abilities for some reason.
Yeah, that was something.
And but he talks about how I like his little like mental internal dialogue where it's like it's remarkably cutting edge as in supermarket shelves 5 years time, otherwise old. So He talks about how he had to kill someone before, so he developed a way to basically shut them down without having to kill them. And it works, so that's good.
There's nothing like being right.
Yeah. It's like, so how many people already have the kit? And the guy's like, I'm not telling you that, so he flies him up into the sky. How many people have the kit? I got four! Four!
That's the funniest scene in the book, I thought.
Which he already knew anyway. It just confirmed what he thought, which was kind of fun. But I like it. I mean, so that's pretty much your first run. So he's going to go track all these down. That'll be your opening storyline for this. But, I mean, as a first, you know, like I said, the art looks decent-ish. But, yeah, I guess it's very traceable.
The art's just something you sort of have to mentally set aside. It's like if Gillen hadn't been writing this, I wouldn't have picked it up.
Yeah,
with Greg Land on the art.
Well, and that is sort of part of our odd jumble of either great art or a great writer, you know, paired with their not necessarily as loved other on either a book or something that's not as well or whatever. Anyway, it's like it's still a combination where it's like, damn it, I have to buy that thing.
Yeah.
But
and ultimately, I think it was pay off. It paid off.
Yeah. It did. It worked. I mean, I bought it.
So. It's a somewhat expository first issue as we set the mission statement down. But hey, it's actually setting a mission statement down going forward, which is more than a lot of first issues that we've talked about lately have managed.
True. True.
It's you get your new armor, you get your obligatory action sequence or two, you get Tony Stark doing all the Tony Starky things that Tony Stark is known for doing: ladies, science, fighting.
Oh, what was the good line in here? Like I missed about the she's gonna go off to get a drink, and he asked if he wanted one. He's like, "Of course I want one. That's what being an alcoholic is all about." Alas, that also means I can't have one.
Yeah. Tony, don't do anything stupid. Does that include the blonde?
This is gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's a very like. It's a refreshingly like fast paced. It's like I could see this maybe even under Fraction. I could see an issue like this being where it was entirely Tony having a conversation with Pepper and like we got the cutaway to Maya dying, and then the cliffhanger would be Tony receiving the message. You know, I could see an issue paced like that very easily from a modern creator. So we get what, under another creator, could really have been two issues worth of content out of the gate. You know, it's a good, well-paced, like, solid first issue. It's not groundbreaking or anything, you know, but it's a highly enjoyable book that looks like it's going to be quite quippy and fun, like Gillen's best work has been, like we've seen on Journey into Mystery.
That
it's probably not going to tear the living heart from my chest the way Journey into Mystery did.
Yeah, but it'll be thoughtful at least, you know. I think it's got those traces of being thoughtful and searching and interesting, so...
It's got a good story hook, albeit one that I sort of have the niggling thought in the back of my head is, was this his or was this...
It's a little corporate-y, yeah.
You come up with anything you want, Kieran, as long as you give us an extremist story.
It's gotta be an extremist story.
There's a little something of that to it, but I'm definitely going to stick around for it. Certainly because it looks like immediately after this setup issue, things are going to get full-on bonkers very quickly, because we know from solicits that we're talking about a secret island of British techno knights and a Russian academy of armored warriors and stuff. It sounds like things are gonna go a little crazy.
Sweet. So awesome. I'm excited. I do apologize for those attempting or have attempted to watch the video, because it's been all over the place for this episode. And I think Nicole's had some connection issues with the snow, and I don't know why Chris McFeely's frozen. But
oh, for goodness sakes. I know. You ever think the problem's with you? You ever think it's with you?
I didn't say it wasn't.
I did.
Just said it could be. I mean, you are on another continent, you know. Signal is having to go underwater.
I'm on a better continent.
We've
got no tropical storms tearing this one up.
No, that's true. No, you just have your economy.
Yeah, that's just true. Oh, yeah, the economy's got much to talk.
That's what hey, come on. As bad as it is here, it is nowhere near as bad as some places in Europe, so.
Yeah, I'll just enjoy my free health care.
Yeah, well. I'll get to be forced to pay for mine.
Moving on.
Anyway, that was fun.
Yes, that was interesting. So Iron Man was a good first issue. Yeah. I don't think it was quite as successful as Deadpool's first issue this month for the first week of the first two new 52s. I keep calling it the new 52. The first of the Marvel Now offerings for this month. Although it was quite as successful as Deadpool. Deadpool wore its heart on its sleeve quite clearly, you know.
Well, they're
very different books anyway, so comparing them is probably a fruitless endeavor.
I think they had different things. I mean, honestly, yeah. Deadpool had the bigger problem to overcome.
But then I think at the same time, Gillen had the bigger shoes to fill.
In some ways, but
I think he did a good job, though. I think that's as good a start as anything I've read from Fraction. Absolutely. He's definitely carrying on the tone, right? And
it's one of those deals where it's like Deadpool has been so overblown and so bad for so long that when you start something new in order to really grab people and do something different, that's an accomplishment. Whereas Gillen is coming on to a book that has been popular, you know, consistently been good for the last, you know, couple of years, at least with the Fraction run, and a really popular character. So is it still good? Yeah, it's still good. So it's like, it would have had to have been incredible to overcome that. Whereas Deadpool is good, which is more than you expect. You know what I mean? So it's a little different. It's a little different take. I would say that, to put them up against each other, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I think in terms of it just doesn't open. I don't know. That's a hard one. It's a hard way to think about it, because they're two totally different things. They're trying to do two different things. So, but Deadpool's great. So lots of good stuff. You should read what we've recommended and talked to you about today, because, you know, we did. And I'll try to make sure I post that link for the local book that I just lost. The name, Nadir's Zenith. So the first and second issues are out. If you're in Oklahoma City, you can go to New World Comics. That's at Northwest 63rd and Meridian, and pick up issues 1 and 2 of that. So now I've lost Chris McFeely as well, It's just me at this point, so we'll see if he comes back for a second. But anyway, on that, go to the website, tfradio.net/live to watch the shows live every Sunday. And also, you can go to our website, which is fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter, at fanboyvs, and Chris Mafili is coming back for us to close out
the show. Don't know what happened there. Weird. Nope. Just dropped out for a second. The power cable got a little loose, and the computer went to sleep. Nope. Turned right back on. Here I am. Didn't have to restart.
Wow. It's all good. Even better. So, So there you go. There's our show. And
cool. Next week, all sorts of stuff.
God, I still
have Thor, Fantastic Four, all new X-Men, X-Men Legacy. JD, you probably want to know the next Jake Ellis mini starts next week, too.
Oh, does it?
It does.
I don't know. Did I finish the first? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I don't know. But yeah, so that should be fun.
Yeah, bunch of stuff next week. So we'll definitely be talking Fantastic Four, at least.
But we might not be here next week.
Oh, that's right. Well, bottoms.
But if we don't, then I would like to think we'll come back the next. So we'll have
there's so much new stuff rolling on at the minute. It's like you're going to have to try and fit it all in, you know?
Yeah, I'll say that we'll either – I would like to – what I'll tentatively promise now is that we will either do an episode next week or the next, but I would doubt both.
But not both.
So one or the other, but probably not both. If I had to say, it will probably be not next week, but the week after. So follow us on Twitter, at FanboyVS, if you would like to know if there will be an episode or not. But I'll make sure to let everybody know before
Keep you
Sunday.
In suspense.
Because, you know, we don't want people hanging out in the chat going, eh. They will anyway. But
hello?
Why is no one here?
Where is everyone?
Anyway, thank you. Sorry that we lost Nicole there, but it was great to have her back. It was nice to have her back. So and Chris Feely, thanks for joining us again.
Always a pleasure.
I missed you last week, but glad you were back. So, all right. So thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.